Good evening. I've been waiting for you. And you're right on time. I have a story for you. A story of a boy and a dream come true. Tommy Williams sat alone in a railroad coach, his face pressed against the window, thrilling to every new sight. Already were forgotten the long days in a hospital bed, the endless struggle for new life. For now he was being sent west to live on a real ranch and begin his greatest adventure.
Yes, it's time for Armchair Adventures, tales of crime, mystery, romance, and comedy. Tonight's Armchair Adventure in just a moment. But first,
all of us at some time are faced with a challenge. And the man in uniform is no exception. Many is the time, for example, when he is called upon to demonstrate his peacetime value and importance to the civilian population of the United States. During 1954, the New England coast was hit by an unexpected and highly damaging hurricane. Not long after the storm passed, the men of the U.S. Naval Base at Newport, Rhode Island, went into action. It supplied portable generators to provide emergency electrical power for three hospitals, a newspaper, two dairies, and an entire city. It provided a 1,000-watt generator to enable a radio station in Newport to resume broadcasting. And when a serious fire broke out in Newport, the Navy base furnished a fire engine and 2,500 feet of hose. It also sent pumping equipment to nearby Portsmouth and a portable floodlighting unit to the Providence Post Office, as well as helicopter surveillance teams over several devastated areas. And in order to prevent rioting and looting as an aftermath of the hurricane, the Navy assigned 105 shore patrolmen to assist local police in four Rhode Island communities. As long as their help was needed, the Navy men gave unselfishly of their time and equipment. Yes, by their aid and assistance, the military once more successfully met a challenge.
And now, here's your storyteller, Marvin Miller, with tonight's Armchair Adventure, West is West.
Tommy Williams' eyes were filled with the sight of green fields flashing by the train window, his ears still ringing with the goodbyes of his only family, the kids at school, his heart bubbling over with the wonder of what was happening. He was being sent west to live on a real ranch. Even the pain in his chest seemed easier to bear. And although he was dizzy with the excitement of it all, he couldn't close his eyes and rest for fear of missing some thrilling sight. That's how he happened to meet Grinner Martin. There was nothing very remarkable in Grinner's appearance as he came through the door from the vestibule and walked up the aisle, taking the sway of the car in stride. But what Tommy's sharp eyes saw immediately were the slant-heeled boots Grinner had on his feet and the wide-brimmed hat he was carrying in his hand. Then his head snapped up and he looked into Grinner's face.
Oh, gosh, mister. Gee, I'm sorry if I was staring.
Grinner was smiling down at him in frank amazement.
Shucks, not at all, son. Why, you mind if I sit here a spell, or was you expecting somebody else?
No, Tommy wasn't expecting anybody else, and he eagerly made room for his guest.
Kind of glad to find somebody to talk to. I reckon you know how it is. Sort of a stranger to things like this I am. You do a lot of traveling?
Gosh, this is the first time I ever been anywhere.
That's about the way it is with me, too. See, my boss sent me back here to see about some horses for a rodeo they're going to have up in Albany.
Tommy had just been waiting for an opportunity to bring the conversation around to something like that, and he didn't miss his chance.
Gee, that's swell. I knew you were from the West.
There was a twinkle in Grinner's eyes as he answered,
Shucks, did you? Somebody must have told you.
Tommy laughed as Grinner went on.
Anyhow, it's sort of a lucky thing we met. What with you and me going to be neighbors, sort of. Where are you going?
Oh, it's a ranch, a great big one. It's near Flagstaff in Arizona.
Hey, wait a minute. Flagstaff? You ain't going to Longman's?
Tommy nearly burst with amazement.
Oh, why, sure, that's where I'm going. That's it.
Grinner held out a huge hand.
Well, by jingo, put her there, partner. I work for Longman. You and me is really going to be neighbors.
From then on, Tommy was an ever-flowing fountain of questions about life in the West, and Grinner was ever patient in answering. For example, there was the time they talked about Indians.
Gosh, that's one thing I do know a little bit about, Indians. Gee, I read all about them. Father Callaghan, he's our teacher. He got me lots of books all about their sign language and all. I know all that stuff by heart.
Sure enough, huh? Well, that's mighty fine. You know, one of my best pals was an Indian when I was a kid. Fact is, one day he saved my life. Shot a big old rattler just about to get me.
Tommy's eyes sobered, and he heaved a big sigh.
Gosh. Oh, gosh, I wish I could do something like that, too, sometime. Maybe if I get well.
Looking into Tommy's white face, it was hard for Grinner to be casual.
Oh, what do you mean, maybe? Well, you'll be as good as new in a few weeks.
Gee, oh, gosh, Mr. Grinner, if I could just do something like that Injun did.
Listen, cowboy, you'll be doing things he never dreamed of.
But whatever pleasures Tommy did anticipate were doubled when at last they did arrive at Longman's. The weeks went by and put pounds over Tommy's skinny ribs and baked color into his pale cheeks. Grinner watched with satisfaction. But most of all, he was happy because Tommy had almost forgotten his sickness. And Grinner knew that was the one thing that could put him back on the road to health. But one day, Tommy had gone down to the corral to look at some new horses brought in the day before. He was leaning over the corral fence calling to a lively pinto, when Pete Corey, one of the hands, walked up beside him.
Yeah, what are you doing, kid? Getting in the way again?
Tommy had never had a particular liking for Corey, but above all, he had tried not to be in the way.
Oh, gosh, Mr. Corey, I was only looking. I didn't know I was in the way.
Corey unlatched the corral gate.
Yeah, well, you are in the way. Don't know why old Longman ever let you come out here in the first place.
The blood began rushing through Tommy's veins, and little needles were stabbing at his lungs.
Mr. Longman's glad to have me here. He told me so himself.
Corey turned and leered at him.
Oh, sure. He says that just to be nice to you. Everybody tries to soft soap people like you.
Tommy's anger gave way to a deep sense of hurt.
Why, I don't know what you mean.
Corey faced him squarely, and there was a look of satisfaction in his eyes.
Ah, don't give me that stuff. You know why people are nice to you? 'Cause you're sick, awful sick. 'Cause in a few months you're gonna...
The word froze in his throat, and Tommy's eyes followed Corey's gaze. Grinner was standing there, looking as Tommy had never seen him look before.
Tommy, go on up the house.
Tommy hesitated.
Go up to the house, kid, and fast.
Tommy went without further protest, and neither man spoke till he was out of sight. Then Corey growled,
Well, what's eating you, Martin?
Grinner's words came slowly and evenly.
Corey, I ought to shove them teeth of yours down your throat.
Oh, yeah? Real tough hombre, aren't you? Hey.
Grinner's hand flew up and clutched Corey's shirt front.
You're getting out of here. You understand that, Corey? You're leaving this part of the country for good.
What are you talking about? Me get out of here? Why, you're talking like a fool, Martin.
Am I? Well, I'm just fool enough to kill you if I ever see that face of yours again. You get that, Corey, I'll kill you.
Corey could tell that Grinner was deadly serious. And he knew, too, that Grinner wasn't a man to make threats he didn't mean. And that night when chow was dished up, Corey wasn't at the table. Grinner answered questions about him cautiously.
Corey, nope. I ain't seen him since this afternoon. Probably just took a notion to meander on. You know, guys like Corey come and go.
Tommy looked at Grinner questioningly as Mr. Longman, the ranch owner, answered,
Yeah, well, I hope he is gone. Nobody's going to miss him. Only thing, though, what about his fence-riding shift?
Oh, I'll take that. That is, of course, if Corey don't come back.
Nothing more was said about it, and the following morning, Grinner saddled up to take Corey's place for a few long days of following the fences. Tommy was there to see him off, and Grinner couldn't help noticing the worry in his face.
Oh, look, kid, it's all right about Corey, see? Just don't say nothing to nobody, that's all.
Grinner, I'm scared. I don't know why, but I'm scared.
Oh, that's no way to talk. Look, I'll be back before you know it.
I'll be watching for you, Grinner. I'll be watching all the time.
Grinner called a goodbye and rode off down the valley. At the spring, he picked up the fence and found he'd taken on more work than he'd bargained for. By noon, he was only a few miles from home and very hungry. There was an abandoned cabin not far away, and he headed there to make himself some coffee and warm some chow. He was crouched at the old fireplace, trying to coax some life into the fire and thinking about Tommy, when he was conscious of movement behind him. He turned quickly to look directly into the eyes of Pete Corey. Then Grinner's glance dropped to the .45 in Corey's hand.
Well, ain't this cozy?
Corey!
Yeah, Corey. Seems to me you were gonna do something if you ever saw me again, huh, tough hombre?
You're drunk, Corey. And you're acting like you was loco.
Corey's face hardened.
Loco, huh? Not loco enough to forget you and me's got a score to settle. Yeah, and you was the one that was gonna kill me.
He moved the gun forward to make his meaning clear. Grinner spoke through his teeth.
Look, Corey, they'd catch you sure, they'd string you up.
Oh, no. Not if you was to die accidental. Not if this place was to catch on fire tonight while you were sleeping. And meanwhile, you and me's gonna have a little party. Yeah, I'm hungry. Get me some grub.
There was nothing for Grinner to do. Corey stepped up and relieved him of his gun, and then prodded him to work over the fire. Grinner fumbled with the pans and once nearly put the fire out in his nervousness. Corey was impatient.
Come on, come on. What's the matter with you? You're clumsy as a day-old colt.
Grinner's eyes were traveling rapidly. There must be some way he could get Corey off guard. But even when the food was done and Corey fell to it, his eyes never once left Grinner, and his finger never left the trigger of his gun. The hours of the afternoon went slowly by. Then at last the moment Grinner had been waiting for arrived. He got to his feet and faced Corey.
The game's up, Corey. Look behind you.
You don't figure on me falling for an old dodge like that.
Okay, you're gonna find out real soon. How about it, Mr. Longman?
The sneer disappeared from Corey's face, for at that moment a voice came from behind him.
Grinner's right, Corey. Drop that gun or you'll never hold another.
Corey whirled as if he'd heard a ghost. His gun was spitting fire. Grinner leaped forward onto Corey's back. From the doorway, a half dozen men plunged inward to complete the job. A few seconds later, Corey was pinned to the floor, helpless as a rope dogey.
Aim it. Just luck, Martin. Just dirty luck.
Grinner was standing over him with one hand clamped over a bleeding forehead.
Oh, no, Corey, not luck. This time it was brains. Brains of a kid who wanted to be a real Westerner. And he is, too.
What are you talking about?
I'll tell you. You thought I was clumsy over that fire, didn't you? Well, maybe you never heard of engine smoke signals, Corey. But Tommy has, and he knew enough to answer my signals for help.
You've been listening to Armchair Adventures. Marvin Miller's Armchair Adventures is a presentation of the United States Armed Forces Radio and Television Service.